Okay, good morning, Gutzbach. The learning we're doing in the Kollel this week is in honor of David Ruderman. We learn in his honor, and we are continuing with the Tshuvos of Rav Asher Weiss in Minchas Asher. So you have in front of you a Tshuva from Chelek Beis, the second volume of Minchas Asher, and Simon Chaf Ches. That whole area, Chaf Ches, Chaf Tes, Lamed, are all, and maybe one or two before and after, are all about the same general topic. We're going to talk about a very specific topic today, a very specific shaila, which I think comes up for almost everyone at some point. It's not a new shaila. It's not like some cutting-edge technology shaila. It's something that's been dealt with the poskim in the past. But I think it's a very telling tshuva in terms of the style of Rav Asher Weiss, which is part of what we're trying to accomplish here, in that he first of all works on Gemaras and Rishonim very in-depth and very helpfully in terms of learning the sugya, making clear. Second of all, he works based on the shoulders of a previous poskim who've already written about this topic. Again, it's not a new shaila. It's something that's been around for a while. And third of all, you see a little bit of his his confidence in order to be able to argue on some of the previous poskim, even big ones, and even sometimes without sources, just based on feeling. So I think it has a lot in this tshuva. Hopefully we'll get to all of it. If not, we'll get to some of it. It's definitely an interesting venture. So if you look in the very beginning of the tshuva, the first lines, Kvodo Sha'al, I mean, the person who asked the shaila, he's writing back to, in this case, it's actually a local shaila. This shaila came from Rabbi Avi Leibowitz, who runs the Kollel in Palo Alto. I don't know if people here have a connection to there. He runs the Kollel in Palo Alto, so he sent this shaila to Rav Asher Weiss. I don't know what year it was. I'm not sure if it even said in the hard copy, but he's a contemporary, obviously. So the shaila was as follows. In b'misgeres avodas hakodesh shel kiruv rechokim. So his Kollel is a Kollel. He's also involved in Kiruv, in bringing people who are far from Judaism closer to Judaism, finding people, helping them along the way, answering questions, inspiring them, etc. So you're involved in Kiruv Rechokim. Is it Mutter Lahazmin Seirim Toim V'Seudas Shabbos Kodesh Almanas Lashpia Lehem Ma'od Kedushas HaShabbos? So I want to know if in the course of my Kiruv enterprise, I'm trying to bring people closer. One of the ways to bring people closer to Judaism is to show them what Shabbos looks like, to bring them in to the Shabbos home, to bring them in by your Shabbos table, let them soak up Kedushas Shabbos, and in such a way, we'll hopefully inspire them to keep Shabbos and hopefully keep all of the mitzvos through that hosting. So the question is, am I allowed to do so? So what's the obvious halachic potential issue with this? What's it called? Lifnei Iver, yeah, you could read at the top of the page if you want to cheat. Lifnei Iver. It's a problem of the Isser of Lifnei Iver. What's the Lifnei Iver here? So we're going to define what that is. Don't worry. But basically the issue here is that these people who don't yet keep Shabbos, they're going to want to come for a Shabbos meal. How are they going to get there? They're going to drive home, and it's going to end up being that you're going to cause them to do Averas on Shabbos. You're not allowed to drive a car on Shabbos, but they want to come to your meal, so they're going to drive, they're going to go home, they're going to text while they're at your meal, whatever. You're going to cause them to do Isurim. Is that a problem of Lifnei Iver? So Lifnei Iver, the way we're using it right now, we're going to come back to this, Blineder, Mitzvah Shem. Lifnei Iver means that you can't cause someone to do an Isser. Now, technically speaking, just very, very strictly speaking, the Pasuk says, Lifnei Iver lo sitein michshol. What literally that means, and there were people, we're not going to define who they were, people who defined it very literally and only literally, who thought it means what the Pasuk literally means, Pshut Lashon Mikra, you can't place a stumbling block in front of blind people, which is absolutely also true. You cannot cause a blind person to stumble if you can't see a helpless person. You put a block in front of his feet and he's going to trip over it. That's obviously usser, and it's usser for this reason and other reasons as well. But it also has an additional level of interpretation, the Gemara assumes. It also means, Lifnei Iver lo sitein michshol, just like you can't put a physical stumbling block in front of a blind person, you also can't put a spiritual stumbling block in front of a person. Meaning, if a person is looking to do an Isser, they're looking to do an Avera, you cannot help them. You cannot give them the Avera and cause them to do that Isser. What's the problem over here? What's the relationship? What's the issue with the relationship between the Isser we're talking about and the Pasuk? In the case of the Torah's words, the person is blind. Nebuch, they can't see anything. So when you place a stumbling block in front of them, they have no choice but to trip over it. What if I say to you, here's some chazer, here's some pig? You're blind? What do you mean? You make a choice. You have bechira chashis. You have free will. You could decide whether to eat it or not. Why am I doing anything wrong by making it available to you? Maybe I'm just trying to give you a test. I saw Avram Avinu gets tests from Hashem. I have a God complex. I'm going to test you on a few things. I'm going to put a piece of chazer in front of you. You're not blind. It's not like I'm telling you it's something else. I'll give you an isser and I'm going to let you eat it. But you choose to eat it or not eat it. So how is that lifnei iver? How is that related to the pasuk at all? So that's such a good kasha that the Rambam asked the kasha. The Rambam deals with this in his Sefer HaMitzvos, in Mitzvos Losa say Reish Sadi Tes, also in Hilchos Ritzeach in the 12th parak. So the Rambam writes that it's true that he's not literally blind in the same technical sense, but everyone has a certain blind spot in their life, which is their taivas, which is their desires. And so even though it's true that you absolutely have free will and you're accountable for all the averos you do, but even so, if I'm tantalizingly placing this pig in front of you, I'm tantalizingly offering you an avera that I know you want, that I know you are so desperate for, a guy's a nazir, and you start pouring all the finest wines in front of him, so that's, he's not literally blind, but his heart has a blind spot, because he's got a desire for what you're offering him, that makes everyone blind in some way, shape, or form, and therefore the iser lifnei iver can come from the pasuk that literally talks about a blind person. The truth is that if you look in the Rambam, you'll see that the Rambam assumes that there's a, Chazal assumed this, but the Rambam's just quoting, the Rambam assumes there's really a third level to this Isser as well. Again, obviously technically placing a stumbling block, the one we just said, which is placing an Isser before someone to cause them to do it, but there's also an issue to give bad advice to someone, that if someone asks you for advice and you mislead them, you send them the wrong way, maybe you don't like them, maybe you're in competition in business with them, so you want to give them a piece of advice that's going to throw them off, that's going to ruin them in terms of their business, going to throw them off track. So that is an Isser Daraisa of Lifnei Iver Lusitin Michshel. Again, the guy is helpless. He's asking you for advice. He doesn't know which way to turn. And you tell him the wrong directions. So that's going to be an issue of Lifnei Iver as well. What's fascinating here, I don't have the answer for this. Well, I have a theory, but we don't have time to get into it now. What's very fascinating about this is the Rambam says, not only is there an Isser to give someone bad advice, but there's also a mitzvah to give good advice to someone. So when someone asks your advice, and you actually give them positive, you know, you're very helpful to them, you give them good advice, that's also a mitzvah daraisa of the, you know, the opposite of lifnei iver, which is to give them good advice and guide them the right way. That's a strange thing. When do we find that in the Torah? When the Torah says something asr, the opposite is obviously a mitzvah. It's not always true. It's not always the case. So it's an interesting question. Again, it would take time to develop a theory about this. We have to think about it. Why does the Rambam think, or he gets it from Chazal, how do they know that that just because there's an isser not to give bad advice, there's also a mitzvah to give good advice? That's a that's an open question. What's interesting in the Rambam, if you look inside, the Rambam says that the isser, the araisa, of giving an etzah she'ena hogenes, of giving bad advice, is shalonita ktsasenu es ktsasenu. What does ktsasenu es ktsasenu mean? Miktsasenu, ktsasenu, some of us, es ktsasenu, some of us. Meaning, you can't give advice, bad advice to, who's us? Jews. It sounds like the Rambam thinks that the Isser of Lifnei Iver, that you can't give bad advice, applies from ktsasenu, a Jew, to ktsasenu, to another Jew. So Jew to Jew, I can't give bad advice. What does it sound like I can do? I could trick a non-Jew. I could send him off a track and give him bad advice. Now, the reason why that's strange, other than if you're confused because we have Gezalakum and different things like that, the reason why that's really strange is because if you look in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Daf Vav, the Gemara brings the case, the most famous cases of Lifnei Iver. The two most famous cases are the following. One, you have a Nazir who's vowed not to drink any wine, eat any grape products for however long the time period is going to be. And you dangle a bunch of grapes in front of him, you hand him a cup of wine. Moshit kos yayin lenazir is a violation of Lifnei Iver. Okay, that's a Jew to a Jew. A Jew is a Nazir. Fine. What's the other case the Gemara brings? Anyone know? The other case the Gemara brings is Aver Menachai to a Ben Noach. That if you have a Ben Noach, meaning a non-Jew, and you offer him Aver Menachai, a nice piece of flesh that you ripped right off of your dog, your cow, whatever it might be, so you hand it to the non-Jew to eat, that is, sorry if anyone has a dog or a cow, that is an Isser Daraisa of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitin Michshel. A non-Jew has seven commandments. One of them is not to eat Aver Menachai. They're not allowed to eat a limb off of a living animal. They have to wait for the animal to have died in order to eat that piece of meat. So now you're offering that to a non-Jew, Aver Menachai. That's an issue of Lifnei Iver. So what is it clear? The issue does apply from Jew to non-Jew. So that's strange. The Rambam just told us that giving advice, bad advice, only applies from Jew to Jew. But here we see the Gemara says Lifnei Iver certainly does apply from Jew to non-Jew. So the Minchas Chinuch, he anticipates an answer that we would want to give. He says it's no good. But he says that maybe one would want to say, no, there's two different Yisurim over here. One Isser is Lifnei Iver giving bad advice. That only applies Jew to Jew. Another Isser is placing an Isser in front of a person, causing them to do an Aveira. That applies from Jew to Jew and from Jew to non-Jew. The problem with that is the Rambam counts them all as one mitzvah. And everyone counts them all as one mitzvah, including the Sefer HaChinuch. So the only possible answer is that even the Rambam, and this is something my Rebbe Rav Tversky Shlita suggested way back when, over a decade ago when we were learning Maseches Bava Metzia, that if you look in the Rambam in his Shrashim, his introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvos, he explains to us a concept of lav shebechlalos. Lav shebechlalos is basically when you have one isur in the Torah, one pasuk, that includes many isurim within it. A lav shebechlalos is interesting because it will be counted as one isur, even though there's a million things associated with it. It's counted as one isur in your count of mitzvos, but you won't get malkos, you won't get lashes for it because it's a lav shebechlalos, because it's kolel, it includes so many other things. The Rambam in that context includes lifnei iver as a lav shebechlalos, which seems to imply that the Rambam himself, although he counts it as one mitzvah, thinks there are in fact multiple layers, multiple levels, multiple mitzvos within this mitzvah of lifnei iver, separate and distinct from each other, which causes there to be no malkos, no lashes. So the Rambam thinks there's one isser of placing a stumbling block, there's one isser of causing someone to do an aveira, and there's another isser of giving a bad advice to someone. It could be that the isser of placing a stumbling block in terms of ruchnius, meaning giving someone an aveira, dangling the wine in front of the nazir, giving the Eved Menachai to a non-Jew, that's an isser which applies across the board even to non-Jews. Whereas the question of advice, bad advice, only applies from Jew to Jew. An interesting suggestion and an interesting possibility probably is the pshat, at least in the Rambam. What's very fascinating, we said before, is that the Rambam does say that you have a mitzvah to now give good advice. So that's something to focus on. Again, we don't know where that comes from. I think that if you look in the Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah, in Shar Gimel, Rabbeinu Yonah, also Rishon, writes this way as well. And I think he even assumes, this is amazing, that not only giving good advice, but spending the time to try to think of good advice, proactively trying to offer help to another person, to another Jew, that's also part of the mitzvah, the positive spin on Lifnei Iver, that you should give good advice to people, that you should help people be guided on the proper path. Yeah. Not in this regard. Not in this regard, no. There are other cases where there are distinctions between types of non-Jews in the sense they can take on certain dinim, they can accept certain things. But in this regard, no. This is across the board, yeah. Okay, so we're asking here a very basic question. I want to invite this Jewish, very friendly, very wonderful couple to my house for Shabbos because I want to bring them closer to Judaism. But I know they're going to drive. They're going to drive to and from my house. So is that okay? And we're saying maybe it's an isser of Lifnei Iver. So a bunch of years ago, Rav Soloveitchik was asked this very question. When the Rav was asked this question, it was by a Rav who lived in New Jersey at the time. He's been around different states since then, but he was a rabbi in New Jersey, and he felt he had a community that was filled with many people who weren't Shomer Shabbos, and he felt the strongest way he could have an influence, the strongest hashpah that he could have on his community was to invite people over for Shabbos meal. So he asked Rav Soloveitchik, can I invite these non-frum, you know, non-yet-observant to Jews to my house for a Shabbos meal? And Rav Soloveitchik, the way Rav Shechter records it in his Sefer, responded without batting an eyelash, absolutely not. He said, it's usser. He didn't have any hesitation. I think he even said, there's nothing to talk about. Ain al mala daber. There's nothing to talk about over here. There's nothing to discuss. It's absolutely usser. Why is it usser? Lifnei Iver. You're right. What is there to talk about? We just spelled out a pasuk in the Torah that says, Lifnei Iver lo sitin michshol. If you invite them to your house, you're causing them to drive on Shabbos. So that's going to absolutely be an issue of Lifnei Iver, says Rav Soloveitchik. Now, thankfully, because otherwise we wouldn't have all the material to fill the time over here, Rav Asher Weiss takes a different approach. If you look in the second paragraph over here, it's a spoiler alert. These next two paragraphs, Rav Asher Weiss tells you what his conclusion is going to be. So even before you read the Tshuva, he tells you what the conclusion is going to be. But if you like his style enough, you'll be addicted to trying to find out why he says what he says. But he tips his hand over here in terms of what the answer is going to be. He says that it can't be. Hakol lefi ha'inyan. You got to judge each case separately. Because the following assessment. The mechad gisa aser lanu lahakel rosh b'kedusha Shabbos linag ba'ofen she'elu she'anu ba'im lekarvam lechay Torah ulekalas ol malchus shemayim yiru chalila she'anu mezalzlam b'kedusha Shabbos ma'alim ayin michilula. On the one hand, it can't be that we disgrace Shabbos in order to teach people at Shabbos. It can't be that we invite people over Shabbos and say, you should really keep Shabbos, come drive to my house for a meal. So on the one hand, that is an oxymoron. It doesn't really make any sense. It's counterintuitive. Me'idach gisa, on the other hand, matzli ma'ot shezoha efshar seyichid lashpi aleihem. Oftentimes, this is the only way to their heart. This is the only way to inspire people. This is the best way to have a hashpa and influence on these people. She'inem tzoy chazak kishulchan haShabbos. There's no stronger influence that you could have. There's no stronger medium for affecting people's neshamas than a Shabbos table and having people over Shabbos. This is an important line of Rosh Weiss because a person has to read this line and think to themselves, is my Shabbos table a place that other people will be inspired to keep Shabbos? Or is my Shabbos table a place where people here my thoughts about the drasha or my thoughts about the guy sitting next to me in shul. What is my Shabbos table? Is my Shabbos table a place of kedusha that people who come are going to be inspired and say, I want a part of this? That's the biggest impact we can have, says Rosh Weiss, theoretically, ideally. Ulaniyaz Daiti, the second paragraph after this, Yesh Makum Lahakel Bezek Fishivur Lakaman. I'm telling you, I'm going to be lenient. He says, the best way to do it is the following, you've probably heard this before, is that you invite these people to your house for Shabbos and you tell them, please come, but please don't drive. Or, I have a room for you, stay over. Or, you know, you tell them, you know, I have a place, I'll look for a place for you. You find a way that you're going to make it work, but you want to offer them the option they shouldn't drive. But even if it's going to be true that you know for sure they're going to drive, and even if they turn it down, and even if it's a group of people that there's no way you could possibly host all of them, even so, Rabbi Shawai says that he thinks we should be makel on this. He thinks it's important enough. And now he's going to delve into the reasoning behind why you could be lenient and the values which drive him to try to be lenient on this case. So if you look in the paragraph that starts with an aleph, the aleph, the bays, the gimel, all those letters, they're not numerating sources over here. They are the headers of the different sections in the tshuva. I just put them on one line to save space, but they're just the headers of each section of the tshuva. So each one's kind of like a different section. So in Aleph, you see that the Rabbi Asher Weiss starts by saying, "Uvenidon didam pashud dekevin shemadubar mechale shabbos vaday ein zet shrei iber denarav ein bo lifnei iver." He throws out a phrase over here that we haven't yet defined that we need to take a second to give some background to. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that there are two cases of lifnei iver that are possible. One, we're going to use the antiquated case, and then we'll try to make it more relevant. One is the following. We're both, this, me and the Nazir, we're standing next to each other, and we're both standing in front of a wine store, and he says, hey, here's a couple dollars. Can you go in and grab me a bottle of wine? Okay, so he could have done it himself, but he sends me to do it. That's one type of case we're talking about. The other type of case is we're on two sides of a river. I'm on the side of the river with the wine store, conveniently, and he's on the side of the river without the wine store. And he's desperate for some wine, and he says, please, please, can you get me a cup of wine and, you know, hurl it across the river to me? It's impossible for him to get it. So in the second case, the Gemara assumes it's obviously lifnei iver, because he can't possibly do the avera without your help. You're making it possible. You're enabling him to do the avera of drinking the wine, even though he's a nazir, correct? Because he's on the other side of the river, it's impossible for him to do it himself. But when you're on the same side of the river, chad iber denara, you're on the same side of the river, and you could both easily walk into the liquor store, but he sends you to do his bidding for him. So that, the Gemara seems to say, is not lifnei iver. Now, we're going to leave it at that for now, but it sounds from the Gemara that that is not usser. Why? Does that make sense? He could do it himself. Lifnei iver means I cause someone to sin. So we said before, he's not blind. Okay, but he has a blind spot for this avera, and you're enabling him. You're causing him to do the avera. But if he could just as easily do it himself, he's just lazy. So then you're not causing him to do the avera. Again, we're going to get back to these words. You're facilitating. You're easing it for him. I don't know. You could say different words, but you're not enabling. You're not causing, right? You're not making him do this avera. So that, says the Gemara, is not lifnei iver. Over here, what kind of case is this? What kind of case is this? This not yet observant Jew, huh? Right, meaning it's chad eber denara. Why? Because let's say you don't have him for Shabbos. So therefore he's going to do what? Drive to the movies? Drive somewhere else? I mean, what's the difference? He's going to drive either way. It's not like he can't drive on Shabbos and you're making him drive on Shabbos. He could drive anyways. So this is really a case of chad eber denara, where you're not causing him to drive on Shabbos. You're just giving him a context in which he's going to drive on Shabbos. But anyways, he could drive on Shabbos. He'll go somewhere else for his meal, or he won't go to, or he'll go to McDonald's for his meal. So he'll have him over. What's the difference where he drives or how he drives? So that is true, says Rav Asher Weiss. However, he says, if you look in the bold, Yesh Makom Lito, in the next bold, She'anu Machshilim Osam Linso Leveseinu Ulei Kein Hayon Asei L'Makom Acher. He says, you could make a distinction that even though it's true that they could drive either way, but now I'm causing them to drive to a specific location, meaning I have hands-on over here. I'm causing them to do a specific thing. But he says, so what? So what? What's the difference if they eat here or they eat at McDonald's? They eat here or they eat at another person's house. It's all the same, like we said before. He quotes this at the end of the paragraph from Moshe Feinstein as a famous tshuva, where he employs this svara, along with a few of the others that we're going to discuss as well. Rav Moshe writes about a catering hall. You have a catering hall that hosts weddings, bar mitzvahs, and the like. And, you know, Jewish catering hall, Jewish-owned, kosher, all that. So normally they have a simcha, they get paid, and the people use the space, and they cater the meal. But now a couple comes, and they say, want to get married there, and you could pick your isser. They're going to have mixed dancing. They're going to have, I don't know, a woman singing the zmiros. I don't know, whatever the case might be. They're going to do some isser at this venue that's not allowed. So Rav Moshe says, is that a case of lifnei iver? You're bringing these people into your catering hall, you're having them make a whole party there, and they're going to do Yisurim. They're going to violate the Yisurim in the Torah by having that space. And you're enabling that. You're giving them the space. So Moshe and the Tshuva writes, no. Why? So if they don't go to the Sands, they'll go to the Marina Del Rey. I don't know what, there's no examples here, right? If they don't go to the Marriott, they'll go to the other Marriott. Whatever. If they don't go to a hotel, they'll go to, who cares which place they'll go to? You got everyone here makes their weddings in Lakewood? I don't know what people do. It's just as far from here to Lakewood as it is from Woodmere to Lakewood, so it's no difference to me. I'll come. So they're going to make their wedding somewhere else. What's the difference? Where are you? So you'll have the mixed dancing. They'll have the mixed dancing. What's the difference? It's Chadar B'Denara. They have plenty of opportunities to have halls that host them, so what's the difference? Interestingly, Rav Moshe does not think that there's a factor of money here. Let's say the non-Jewish hall is offering them a $100 price, and you're offering them a $150 price or $50 price in order to get their business. So does that make a difference? Or Moshe doesn't think it makes a difference, meaning the price is not a big enough factor. They could do it somewhere else if they wanted to, so it's not called being machshel. You're not tripping them up because they're choosing to do it either way, and you're just the one place they chose to. What's the difference if they go to you or they go somewhere else? You're not really causing them to do the Isser. Yeah. So that's what that's the first point that Rav Asher Weiss here raises, and it's an important point. He adds at the end of Aleph, before the Beis, he adds just another discussion about whether there's an issue where you may be adding more Yisurim. You may be causing them to do more Yisurim. I don't know, maybe they would drive to McDonald's, which is around the corner. Now they're going to drive to your house, which is 10 minutes away. But he does away with that. He says most of the Rishonim don't think that's really really an issue. Okay. In Oz Beis, the second section of the Tshuva over here, so you see an interesting discussion that deepens what we're talking about. So the Gemara had said that if you have the easy possibility of doing the aver yourself, but the other person is helping you do it, that's not lifnei aver. That's presumably the way we left it. It's nothing. It's nothing because he could do it himself. But the Rishonim there, and this is Stira and Rishonim and Machlokas Rishonim, but the Rishonim assume that there's another level of Isser over here, that even though it's absolutely true, that on a D'oraisa level, on a biblical level, if a person could do the Isser himself, you're not doing anything. You're not adding anything by causing to do it. It's not causing. He's already going to do it. It's not really changing anything in terms of his trajectory. Even though that's true, there is an Isser Derabanan. There is a rabbinic prohibition of helping them do so, and here you could phrase it a few different ways, but we'll call it misayaya, of assisting. Facilitating someone's iser is also a problem. Remember before we said you could say facilitating, you could say easing, you could say assisting. So facilitating, easing, whatever the words were, doing those things will be an issue, at least on a derabanan level, at least on a rabbinic level. Why? Because you're not causing, but you're helping. You're helping them do an iser. How could that be okay? How could anyone think that is a positive thing to do? So therefore, the Rishonim, the Tosis in a few places, the Rush, assume that that's an Isser. Now, I didn't put it on the page for you, but Tosis and the Rush have stiras. They have contradictions over here as to when this applies or when this doesn't apply, and Rav Asher Weiss is dealing with that. But in that context, again, we left this out because it's a detail, but in that context, Rav Asher Weiss quotes from the Shach in Shulchan Aruch in Yeradeus and in Kufna Na'alf. The Shach says that we have this mitzvah of separating people from Yisurim, of making sure that they don't do Yisurim, even if it's not technically, biblically, a violation of Lifnei Iver, but there's still an issue of Misayeya, of assisting them in the Aveira. That is only true, the Shach seems to say, when you're talking about someone who is a from Jew. However, if they are a non-Jew, or if they are a Mumar, meaning they're someone who violates the Torah blatantly, and have no regard for halacha, and therefore they have a status of a non-Jew, in such cases, you do not have the need to separate them from doing Yisurim, nor the need to not facilitate their Yisurim. It doesn't apply to them. The whole mitzvah doesn't apply to them. The Nadi Yehuda, in his commentary, Daglam Rav Abba, on the side of the page there, he takes issue with this comment of the Shach, and he thinks, how could it be? Even if they're sinners, they're still Jews. Meaning, I don't know if this is a good mashal, but it might be a good mashal. You know, we said this last week. If you don't believe in the Yud Gimel Ikarim, if you don't believe in the main principles of faith, you lose your status as a Jewish person. Which means, on the one hand, if you touched my wine and it wasn't mevushal, it would be problematic. I wouldn't be able to drink it. Does it also mean you can be my Shabbos guy? No, you can't be my Shabbos guy. You're still Jewish. You still have to act like a Jew, you still have to keep mitzvahs, you're not pater from mitzvahs. You have a status of non-Jew for, towards other people. But people have to act to you like you're a Jewish person. So similarly here, the Nadi Yehuda says, maybe they're sinners, okay, but they're still Jewish. you still can't cause them to do Yisurim. You still can't help them do Yisurim. You still have to stop them from doing Yisurim. So he says you can't apply that rule of the Shach across the board. The Rabbi Yehuda says what it must mean is that if they are blatant violators, not in general, but of this Isser, meaning they're trying to do this Isser and nothing you can do is going to stop them, they're not shogeg, they're not accidental, so you're not facilitating it. They're going along their way and you're just there for the ride. That's where the Rabbi Yehuda says the rule doesn't apply and there wouldn't be an issue of Lifnei Iver or even the Derabban of Misayaya. If you look in the Rav Asher Weiss is here. So far, yeah, that's what we're saying, exactly. So Rav Asher says, if you look again, Os Beis, I think it's the second paragraph here. V'yesh la'ayin, you see that? L'fi zeh benidon nidan. D'mechad gisa, on one hand, k'mat kol Yehudi yodeh min astam, she'lefi toraseinu akadosha, asur l'nsoa b'rechav b'shabbos. Now, there are exceptions. He said k'mat. But do you agree with the following statement? Literally, almost everybody, even happens to be non-Jews, but almost every Jew knows that you're not allowed to drive on Shabbos. Obviously, there are exceptions, but almost every Jew knows. I mean, the exceptions are usually people don't know they're Jewish, meaning, but otherwise, everyone knows it's us to drive on Shabbos. That being said, they may think, some people might think, no, Orthodox Jews are not allowed to drive on Shabbos. Reform Jews are, yeah, allowed to drive on Shabbos. I mean, maybe they have this thought process. They think there are three legitimate paths in Judaism, Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform. The Orthodox have this chumrah, but we don't have such a chumrah, so it's possible some people do think that, says on the other hand. And even the people who don't know, they do know, but they don't realize, they're all what we call tinok shenishba. Tinok shenishba means that in a case, the Gemara is literally talking about, of a person who was raised by wolves, meaning they don't, raised by wolves, raised by non-Jews, meaning they don't know about the Torah, even if they've heard of a concept of Shmirah Shabbos, but it doesn't add up to me, I have to keep Shabbos. It's just some foreign concept that I've heard of, that Jews do this in certain sects. So then they're called a tinok shenishba. They're not really, what's the word? Apostates. They're not the, biyad rama. They're not raising their hand against the Torah. They just don't know any better. So Rav Asher Weiss invokes what is famous from the Chaznish, that so many or all of the people nowadays are really tinok shenishba. Because first of all, so many people aren't educated. But second of all, the world is a place of such taiva, such schmutz. It's so mixed up and muddled up, the whole society, that it's so hard to discern. A thinking person can't find the right way unless they're really guided. So he said, so the Chaznish made this famous, the Rav Asher Weiss is really invoking it over here. So many people, or really almost all of the people, are considered a tinok shenishba, in which case these kinds of rules wouldn't apply, and they would certainly be called a shogeg. Yeah.
Just a point of interest. I had a conservative rabbi explain to me that he used to walk to shul, but then the neighborhood became, turned a little bit, not so safe. So because of pikuach nefesh, he now drives on shul.
Okay, that's wrong. Right, yeah. They used to do that. They used to write tshuvas about these things. Yeah, not so much anymore, but they used to write tshuvas about these things. Yeah, so so that's an interesting discussion. We could really take a tangent here. I remember last year we had a one tshuva of Rav Asher Weiss about Maisa Shabbos, if you recall, which means that if a Jew performs a malacha on Shabbos, you're not allowed to get benefit from it on Shabbos, or in some cases even after Shabbos. So we had discussed there's a difference between someone who did it accidentally, someone who did it on purpose, someone who came home from shul, took off their yarmulke and threw the chicken in the oven because they were sick of Judaism, or someone who came home from shul, put the chicken in the oven because they forgot it was Shabbos. Right, accidental versus on purpose. So there's room to discuss whether every case of someone who's not frum, who cooks on Shabbos, so it's always an accident because they don't really know about Shabbos. They don't really understand Shabbos. Some posts can raise that issue. It can't be. It can't be that the whole lot disappears, but it's something to think about, why it isn't true. Rav Zilberstein, in one of his svarim, he quotes from Eliashiv that when you talk about not from Jews, you have to point out there are different types of not from Jews across the world. The not from Jews in Israel, he says, cannot be considered a tinok shenishba. You ever meet a chiloni from Israel? They're firmer than you half the time. They definitely know Tanakh better than you, and they know all the nyanei emuna. They know all about Shabbos. They know all the halachos. Nebuch, they don't keep them. Nebuch,
they raised them the same way.
Right. That's the pushback, I think. Someone along the way, that's what I was saying, either this generation or many generations ago already, someone threw them off, but they know everything. So it's hard to say they're not educated is the point. Even if they were raised by, not from people, and therefore they were so misguided, it's hard to say they're not educated. They know very well what the halachos are. They know very well what's going on, but they still decide to stick with their ways. I think the pushback is what you said, and that's a question of, you know, it's almost, I don't know if it's psychological, I'm not sure what the question is, halachic or psychological. At what point does a person literally doesn't know any better, or you do know better and you're choosing to violate? You could know all the things in the world, but if you were raised to think that's just knowledge, it's just a textbook about Shabbos, then are you really any better than anyone else in the world? That's a discussion. The posting of Zilberstein quotes of Eliashiv like this, not everyone obviously agrees. Not everyone agrees. Like we said before, even if it was true that you would consider every Jew in the world Tinuk Shenishba, and therefore every case of Shogig that they do, every case of Isser Shabbos they do is a Shogig, and therefore we would say, oh, you could benefit from their food after Shabbos. So some of the contemporary poskim, I know that that the Nissen Karelet said this, and others in a journal I read, that even Chaznish, when he said everyone's a Tinuk Shenishba, he never meant it Lakula. He never meant that you could therefore, you know, eat their food on Shabbos. He meant it for other dinim. He didn't mean that it's a kula. Okay, that's a discussion in the postgame. It's a tangent, but it's important to realize. But that question of whether every non-frum Jew is considered, you know, off the derech in the sense of egregiously off the derech, or considered nebuch, that shogeg, he's an accidental, he doesn't realize, he doesn't know any better, that has a big nafkamina for us. Are we commanded to take care of them in terms of spirituality? Are we commanded to make sure they don't do any more isurim? Of course we want to be makariv. Of course we want to love them. Of course we want to bring them close. The question is, are we held accountable if we cause them to do an avera? That will depend on this machlokes in the achronim. So Rashi Weiss again has it both ways over here. Yeah. If you look in source Gimel, so section Gimel, I should say. So Rav Asher Weiss here starts to discuss something he discussed in another svarim, which is what exactly is the background for the issue of causing someone, well, not quite, say helping someone do an avera, misayaya, or the need to make sure someone doesn't do an avera, the ilah afrushem yisura, to keep them away, to prevent them from doing yisurim. Where exactly does that come from? So Rashi Weiss says he thinks there are two possibilities. One is that we have a mitzvah in the Torah of holcheach toichiach es amisecha, that there's a mitzvah daraisa of giving rebuke, of giving musar, of making sure you tell someone off when they're doing the wrong thing. Now, this mitzvah is very complicated to apply always, and especially nowadays. The Gemara has klalim, the Gemara has rules as to when this mitzvah is applicable. You only want to say something that people are going to listen to. Otherwise, you usually have the opposite effect. You usually push people away. But additionally, people nowadays are significantly weaker than the previous generation. I think Rabbi Schreiber can attest to that in schools, but it's also true about adults. It's also true about adults. Everyone is a lot more sensitive. Everyone is a lot weaker than they were. Rabbi Schreiber, I assume throughout your career even, you've seen the change. Well, okay, no comment in front of the kids, yeah. We'll talk about this next week when they're not here. Okay. But I think it's true objectively that the generation is a weak generation. And so to yell at someone, to scream at someone, that is not the way to bring people close anymore. It's not the way to get people to stop doing the wrong thing anymore. It's true about chinuch for your children. It's true about chinuch in school. It's true about the shul rabbi. It's not the way we talk anymore. It's not new. It's a previous generation was like this also. It's an important point. There is a mitzvah, though, somewhere along the way. You're supposed to tell someone they're doing something wrong and give them musar and help them get back on the straight and narrow. So that's a first possibility. If you say that the mitzvah of holcheach toichiach maybe extends and says, hey, if you see someone doing the wrong thing, you got to stop them from doing it. Or if you see someone who's going to do the wrong thing, you can't help them do it. Right? Those mitzvos can grow out of the mitzvah of holcheach toichiach, the overarching theme of rebuking someone who's doing something wrong. There's also another possibility Rav Ashwai suggests, which is the mitzvah of arvas. Arvas means that we're all connected, we're all one, we're all intertwined. So on the one hand, that means, you know, on Shabbos morning when I make Kiddush, if you come over to my house and say, hey, I didn't hear Kiddush yet, I can make Kiddush for you too. Why? The Ritva says in Rosh Hashanah, that because even though I made Kiddush already, I was Yotzei, my mitzvah of Kiddush, but Klal Yisrael wasn't finished with Kiddush yet. You didn't hear Kiddush. So I can make Kiddush to help you do your mitzvah, because we're all one. We're all interconnected. We're all intertwined. Arevim zelazel. We're all connected through mitzvahs. That's true positively. I can make Kiddush for you. It's also true negatively. Balchanan Wasserman makes this point in Kovetz Aros that is true negatively as well, meaning if you are doing an Isser, it's my responsibility to make sure that you don't do the Isser. Our collective Jewish unit, our collective Jewish body is commanded on the 613 mitzvos. We have to watch out for each other on both ends, the positive commandments and the negative commandments. Yeah.
Can you differentiate between Drabban and Teres?
In which case?
In the mitzvos, when you tell someone not to do it, are you differentiating, saying if it's a Drabban, maybe not saying it, if it's a...
Well, I don't think you don't say anything, but it may be more limited. Yeah, it could be more limited, depending on how strong of an issue it is. Also, if they're doing it accidentally and they're not going to listen, mutav shiyu shogegin, let them do it accidentally. Right. Well, it applies to deraisas, just not if it's explicit in the pasuk.
Right.
I think it does apply to deraisas, though, just not if it's in a clear pasuk. Sorry? Right.
And
So yeah, they're going to be complications in terms of, or not complications, it's complex, it's nuanced in terms of when and how it applies, but you know, the basic theme is that it does apply across the board, yeah.
We had a situation here where the Erev was down years ago.
Right.
It went down on Shabbos.
On Shabbos.
And the decision was pretty much not to make it public.
Yeah. So that's
people were going to carry anyway.
Right. Oh, well, that's an interesting reason. There's two reasons you would be quiet about it. So if you think everyone's going to carry anyways, then that's maybe Mutashu Shogun. It might be even better than Mutashu Shogun. I think Rabbi Yashav writes about this somewhere, that when an Erev goes down on Shabbos, so it's not even Shogig. It's not that you forgot it's Shabbos. It's not that you forgot you can't carry. Shogig means I know it's Shabbos, but I forgot you're not allowed to carry. Or I know you're not allowed, I know it's, I forgot which one I said already. I know it's Shabbos, but I forgot you can't carry. Or I forgot it's Shabbos, even though I know usually you can't carry. I just think it's Sunday. Here, it's better than both of those things because it's, I know it's Shabbos, and I know you can't carry. I just don't know the Erev is down. I thought the Erev was up. So it's even less. So what is that categorized as? It's probably called Misasek. Misasek is a major machlokas in the Achronim, the Bekid Eger, and the Nesibis, whether when a person does the issue of the Avera, Bimisasek, meaning he's totally absent-minded. It's not that he knows it's Shabbos but forgot the Malacha, knows the Malacha but forgot it's Shabbos. He does not know he's doing something that would be classified as Malacha. He doesn't know the Erev is down. In such a case, did he do the Isser? Is it an act of Isser? But he's putter, he's exempt from the Karban because, hey, he didn't know? Or no, you didn't do anything. In order to violate Shabbos, you have to know it's Shabbos. Or know the Isser, but you can't not know anything. You're misasig. It's totally absent-minded. You have no idea what's going on whatsoever. Is that an Isser with an exemption? Or it's not even an Isser? So I think Rabbi Yashiv says this exact question is dependent. One second. This exact question is dependent on that question. Meaning, if the Erev is down and there's someone carrying something, whether or not he's going to listen, is he doing anything right now? It could be he's not doing anything because he doesn't know the Erev is down, and therefore you wouldn't even have to tell them according to that approach in the Achronim. This happened to me once. This was years ago. I was single. It was probably 15 years ago, something like that. We were away for, it happened to have been Shabbos Yontif. We were away, and the Erev didn't go down. This is crazy, though. The place where we were, it didn't usually have an Erev, but they put an Erev up for the Jews for Yontif. On the second day of Yontif, which was Shabbos, I think, no, on the second day of Yontif, which wasn't Shabbos, the non-Jews came around and took down the Erev. Not because they were, I mean, they probably also didn't like us, but it wasn't because of that. They came around taking down the Erev because they thought Yontif was over. It's the morning, but I think they thought it was one, they held one day Yontif, these guys. So they took down the Erev across the whole town. It was crazy. So we were in Shul, their Erev was down, everyone was going to carry their Talesim home, and there wasn't really a place to leave it. It was a complicated situation. So there was really no one actually there to pass on this. There was no rabbi available. I had the longest Shmon Esrei, so they asked me what to do. So at the time, what I had recommended, Rav Schechter complimented me on it afterwards. I had recommended, again, it was Yontif, not Shabbos. So you're allowed to carry things that are at Tzorech for Yontif. So I had recommended that whatever you have, they gave out these, you know, Yiskara peel cards, things like that, tissues, sucking candies, whatever you have, those aren't all at Tzorech of Yontif. You don't need to carry that to your house. Now you're not using it for your meal. So you're not allowed to carry that if there's no Erev on Yontif. You're only allowed to carry things you need. So I recommend it to people that they put all of those items into their talis bag, because the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos has a rule of Eged Kli Shmei Eged, which means that if you have multiple things in one container, in one bag, something like that, then everything is combined. It's all considered one entity. So even though it's true that I can't carry the sucking candies, and I can't carry the Yizkor card, and I can't carry my dirty tissues, but if they're in the talis bag, and you assume you're allowed to carry your talis home with your siddur, with your chumash, with your whatever you need in there, so then now you can carry everything in one bag, because you're already allowed to carry the bag itself. So I was young, but I think Rav Schechter said, they should give you smicha. Yeah. It was clear that he's being sarcastic, meaning he thinks I don't deserve smicha, I guess. I'm not sure. But it was I didn't deserve smicha for that, but he did say that was a good suggestion. The other suggestion is that there is a shita in the Rishonim that holds there's no issur of carrying on Shabbos, on Yontif whatsoever. And they would have been making on this entirely, but why would we rely on that if we could have a different Eitzah? So it has happened, but I think Rabbi Yashiv says it should depend on that discussion we just had about Rabbi Kiva and the Nesivis, whether you're doing an action of an Isser in that case or you're not. Yeah, how did we get to that? Anyone remember? Yeah, why are we talking about that? Arvus and Tochiach, right, rebuking people, fine, good. So Rashi Wai says it depended on those two possibilities as to what the source for the issue of Mitzayeya, of supporting, of assisting, of facilitating an Isser, and the need to separate someone from an Isser as well. If you look at Oz Dalid, you'll see a very interesting comment that Rashi Wai quotes. We'll skip... One point that Rashi Weiss makes, which is important, is that you have to look at the entire situation. Again, I'm not going to read it inside, just in the interest of time. You have to look at the entire situation. Let's say I have this guy over Friday night for a meal. So he's going to do an Isser Daraisa, many Isserim Daraisa of driving to my house on Shabbos, correct? Okay, let's say I don't invite him. What's he going to do Friday night? Tell me. Drive somewhere. What else?
Eat trip,
okay. Text. Watch TV. Watch another movie after that TV. Maybe another movie. Right? Meaning, he's going to do a lot of malachos. So, not only is it true that he could do it either way, what else is true? If he comes to my meal, exactly. If he comes to my meal, he's going to do less. He's going to do mitzvahs and he's going to do less isurim. Because he's going to drive, which is a terrible thing, but then he's not going to text during the meal. That would be rude. Right? He's not going to sit there watching TV while we're eating. We're going to spend 2 hours of him not breaking Shabbos. Adrabah, just the opposite. I'm causing him to do less isurim. So that's an important point to think. When you're a posek, you have to think past the question. You have to think, what's the context? What's going to happen over here, depending on how we answer the question? The answer is he's going to keep more of Shabbos if he comes over for a meal. So Rav Asher Weiss makes that point as well. He also quotes here a very, very famous comment of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman writes this in Minchas Shlomo. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, if you have a case, his case is the following. You have a not from worker, an electrician or something, who comes over to your house. It's probably more relevant in Eretz Yisrael, although there are, you know, a lot of Jewish plumbers and things like that locally also, but it's more true in Eretz Yisrael. You have a not from a chiloni electrician, a plumber comes over, and you want to be nice. You want to give him a cup of soda, a cup of water, a cup of coffee, a cake, something to, you know, help them feel good while they're working there, which is a nice thing to do and the proper thing to do, whether it's a Jew or a non-Jew. That's the right thing to do, to offer someone who comes to your house something to drink, something to eat. Maybe even more so when it's a non-Jew in a certain way. But it's important to offer everyone. So you want to offer this chiloni Jew a piece of cake, something to sit down. Vincente, my gardener, loves my wife's potato kugel. I never would have offered it to him if I knew how much he likes it. I would have given him more water. But he was really into potato kugel. He asked me for the recipe. And I don't think it works like that. You can't make potato kugel. You have to come. My wife makes potato kugel. You guys don't make potato kugel. But so you offer them something to eat, but you know he's not going to make a bracha. So is that lifnei iver? So this is a fascinating thing. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah says, yes, that's lifnei iver. That's an issue, because you're causing him to do an avera. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, yes, it's lifnei iver, but what happens if you don't give him the drink? What happens if you don't give him the cake? He's going to develop more hatred for the Jewish people, more hatred for the frum people, I should say, because he's Jewish also, and therefore you're going to build up this sinna, this hatred inside of him. If you don't do this small isser of not making a bracha, you're going to cause him to do more isurim daraisa of hating Jews. Not making a bracha is an isur darabanan. Hating Jews is an isur daraisa. So the balance comes out, says Rav Shlomo Zalman. It's fascinating. He says, against Shulchan Aruch. Against what it says in Shulchan Aruch, you should really give the drink, give the cake to the guy, in order to not cause him to do anything worse than what he's already going to do by missing a bracha. Rav Zilberstein, in a Yeshurin Journal article, when he writes, like, you know, Divrei Hesped, eulogies, that type of praises for his father-in-law, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Zilberstein Shlita, not the son-in-law. Rav Zilberstein, in his article, not for his father-in-law, but for Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he writes a story that one time he came to visit Rav Shlomo Zalman at the end of his life in the hospital. And Rav Shlomo Zalman was lying on the bed, and his family was there, and the family brought him some nice, delicious food they made at home. And the food smelled so good that it was clear that the whole room had the reyach hanichayach of the food. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said that he'll eat it, but he wants to share it with his roommate who was next to him. The roommate next to him was a chiloni Jew, not frum. They knew that the Jew was not going to make a brach on the food. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, for two reasons he thinks you have to share the food. One is that maybe it's pikuach nefesh, meaning maybe he smells this food and it makes him all excited and then he can't eat it and it's going to cause a deterioration in his health. That's a real concern. The second thing he said is that the sum total we're going to gain over here, even though it's true that he's going to not make a bracha, if I don't give him the food, he's going to have a taromis. He's going to have a complaint against me. He's not going to like the from Jews. We got to give him the food in order to save him from the bigger isurim. So that story about Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is lechora consistent with what we just said from his tshuvas. My chavrusa, Rabbi Per, who's the Sgan Rosh Kol in our kolel, so he had a very interesting raya last year from a gemara. The gemara in Sanhedrin says, Tosas in Sanhedrin on Daf Zayin say, because it's not clear the gemara says this, Tosas say that the gemara is quoting a pasuk of Rabim Heshev Me'avon, that about Aaron HaKohen, that Aaron returned or prevented many from doing Averos. So the Gemara, according to Tosas, assumes that that's referring to Aaron HaKohen helping the Jewish people make the Egel Azav. He helped them make the Egel Azav, and that was the biggest Kiruv movement. That was the biggest Baal Tshuva movement we've ever seen. What are you talking about? Rabim Heshev Me'avon, he returned people from sin. He prevented sin. He caused sin. He caused the Egel Azav. One of the worst sins in history. What are you talking about? So Tosas say, no. What would have happened if he didn't help them with the Egel Azav? What would they have done? They would have killed him. They would have killed him. They killed Chur. He knew he was next. So instead of saying no Egel Azav, he said, let me help you do the Egel Azav. Why? Because he knew if he helps them do the Egel Azav, they won't kill him, which is a much worse Aveira, maybe that it's even impossible or hard to do tshuva from. So Aaron HaKohen, in causing everyone to do the Egel Azav, was preventing them to do a bigger Isser of Ritzicha, of murder. So my Chavrusa, Rabbi Per, pointed out, that's L'chora, proof, Araya, for Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. What do you mean? Lifnei Iver means causing someone to sin. I'm causing the Jewish people to sin with the Egel Azav over here. Okay, so there's a whole picture you have to take into account. If you're going to cause them to do a small Aveira, relatively speaking, compared to a big Aveira of murder, the ultimate Aveira, so then you choose the smaller Aveira, just like Rav Shlomo Zalman said, that you give the guy some food to eat, even though he's not going to make a bracha, to save him from doing the bigger Yisurim of hating Jews and pushing him farther off the Derech as well. Well, yeah, but you could have two, meaning those two things are possible. Meaning he was punished for how he went about it, or for getting into the situation in the first place is really... You have to, the Rav Soloveitchik said that really the issue is not what he did. It's that he got himself into the situation in the first place. He should have prevented the issue in advance. Maybe he made the right decision here, though, at this point. But that is what's difficult about Tosos. Rashi says a different shadow there. Yeah, very good. Rav Asher Weiss quotes this, and this is so nice. It's so classic if you look inside. Rav Asher Weiss quotes this from Shlomo Zalman. He says, nah, he disagrees. With Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he disagrees. He says it's very nice and true that there's like a bigger picture, but the Shulchan Aruch says what's Asr and what's Mutter. Based on our feelings that we're going to push the guy further off the derech, we're going to say against Shulchan Aruch, what Shulchan Aruch didn't have those sensitivities? It's hard. It's hard to say that. So Rav Asher Weiss says, no. The rule of Lifnei Iver in general, the way Chazal and the Gemara, the way our Chachamim made the halacha through the Torah, was that they took into account the balance of pushing people away and bringing them close. So they took that into account. But once they gave us the halacha and put it and sin Shulchan Aruch, you can't now in each case make a cheshbon. Oh, this guy, it's better if I do this, worse if I do this, better if I do... No, you can't. It's not up to every person to make that decision. So maybe begadol, overall, there's a theme of balancing those two values, but you can't make that decision on your own in each and every case. What else can you do? I don't know, you give it to the guy and encourage him to make a bracha. Or you give it to the guy and you say, I'm going to make a bracha, you say, amen. There are ways to get around it, but he says not to take advantage of that Rosh Shlomo Zalman. Either way, and he ends with this, he says, when in our case you have the situation that it's first of all, Chad Eber Denara. Second of all, the guy's going to do less Yisurim if you call him over. Third of all, it's not clear if the whole issue applies because he's not a firm Jew and maybe the issue of Misayeya or Lahafrish doesn't apply. Maybe it does, but maybe it doesn't. You put everything and everything together and then you take into account, first of all, that he's going to have a better Shabbos because of you. And second of all, he might have more Shabbos because of you because you're going to have the biggest influence on him through doing this. So because of all of that, Rav Asher Weiss comes out, like we said in the very beginning, and says that is permissible. It's mutter, and therefore it's a mitzvah. It's the right thing to do to invite these people over. And he ends with an important line. He says, Nira Baru Pasha, in the very end, L'aniyaz Daiti, the Kasher, Kol Kavanasu L'Karvan Ba'avosos Ahava. When all your intention is just to bring people close through love, Ulach Nizam Tachas Kanfei HaShechina, to bring them under the Shechina, to keep Torah and mitzvos, Nimsa Chumro Kulo. If you're Machmir on Shabbos, you're being Makil on getting more Jews to keep the Torah. If you're Machmir on Shabbos, you're being Makil on getting more from Jews into this world. Ubal Nefesh, if you want to be a really from Jew, Roi lo lahachmir batzalos nefashos. The better chumrah here is to save lives, to save Jewish lives. The better chumrah than being Machmir on Shabbos over here is to be Machmir on hatzalos nefashos, on saving these not from Jews from falling off into an abyss that we'll never be able to catch them from. Bring them in, even if it involves a little bit of a drive on Shabbos, which is inappropriate and wrong, and we're going to try to teach them not to do that. But if you put together all the factors, it wins out. It balances out that it's probably better to invite them over. Like we said in the beginning, Rav Soloveitchik was machmir on this and said there wasn't much to talk about. Rav Asher Weiss disagreed on two fronts. He thought there was a lot to talk about, and he disagreed. He was making it, he was lenient. So here you have an interesting psak from Rav Asher Weiss. Again, one that if you have a halacha l'maisa shaili, you should certainly ask your local Orthodox rabbi. But at least we have Rav Asher Weiss's opinion under our belt. Okay, everyone have a wonderful day.